Tech Talk with Jess Kelly.
Thanks to Vodafone Business. With cybersecurity solutions from Vodafone, your business can hack off the hackers. See vodafone.ie/business.
This is News Talk.
Yeah, you're very welcome to Tech Talk. This is Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. Coming up over the next hour, Derek Riley will join us to talk about supercars of the future. And we'll hear what he's doing to smarten up his home. Later in the show, we'll look at the dangerous sides of developing a relationship with ChatGPT. And as ever, I'll answer your tech questions. If you want to get in touch, you can do so right now. You can email me techtalk@newstalk.com. I hope you're well and that your week has gone well. I want to start this week's show by saying a huge thank you to a taxi driver called Ali, because last Friday I landed back from New York, came straight into the office and left the office with my backpack on my back, my suitcase in my left hand and my laptop in my right hand. And I got a taxi from the News Talk office to my home. And when I got out of the taxi, I had the backpack and I had the suitcase, but I left the laptop on the back seat of the taxi. And I was so exhausted over the weekend that I didn't realise I had left the laptop in a taxi until I went to look for it on Monday morning. So as I was getting ready to leave for work, I looked in the usual places for my laptop, couldn't find it, went into a bit of a panic, and then started retracing my steps. And that's when I realised I had left it in a taxi. So I went on to the Freenow app, because thankfully I had booked the taxi through Freenow. And if you go into your Freenow app and if you go into trips and if you go into whatever the last one was or whenever you think you've lost something, you can, GDPR compliantly, get in touch with the driver. So I did this and the team at Freenow were so helpful, and Ali dropped my laptop back here to the News Talk office. I have never been more grateful to anybody in my entire life, because it's not that there's anything on the laptop that's not backed up, but it's just, it's my laptop and it would have been an absolute pain in the face. So a huge thank you to Ali. I really, really appreciate the lovely act of kindness and soundness and honesty of bringing the laptop back. But it was also a really good reminder to me to always have everything backed up. I have everything on my laptop backed up to my OneDrive. So it's always accessible. But I guess if you haven't backed all of your bits and pieces on your phone, on your laptops, on whatever up, do it now, because you don't want to be in the blind panic that I was in last week. So thank you, Ali. I very much appreciate it. But anyway, that's kind of been the highlight of my week. But this weekend, there is something very exciting happening in Dublin. And I'm delighted to say that our old pal, Derek Riley of Nevo.ie, is with me now. Derek, how are you?
I'm very good, Jess. How are you?
I am very well. I said at the end of the show last week that I need to get you on to talk about some housey bits. And we might do that in a few minutes, but it wouldn't be you if we didn't start with cars. And there's something special that you're working on this weekend.
Yeah, usually I'm all about the electric vehicles and I haven't changed my spots. But this weekend we've got the Supercar Weekend at Dundrum Town Centre. And I am going to be there with regards to the future of supercars. And I'm on a panel on the Saturday and chatting about where supercars are going and that electrification of that journey. But it's on Saturday and Sunday this weekend. It's free to attend. Great family day out, and they're totally transforming the red car park and going to have over 100 supercars, new and old, for everybody to ooh and ah over and take pictures with and all the rest of it.
What's a supercar?
So, defined usually by the price tag. Okay. And so, for example, one of the cars here this weekend is going to be a 1955, which you think, oh, that's a bit of an old car, Derek. What's that about? It's a Mercedes-Benz 300 SL Gullwing. And the value of that car, Jess Kelly, is 2 million euros.
What?
Yep. And I have to say, it's not electric, but It is a stunning car. Mercedes-Benz are really the only ones that can do gullwing. And if you haven't seen what a gullwing car is like, pop along to Dundrum this weekend. But yeah, they are something that is definitely appreciating in value. And some people see them as an investment, classic cars, but supercars are that next level up.
Yeah, I've got a friend and colleague here in News Talk, Neil Kavanagh, and he loves old Minis. So he has his own little garage and he like tinkers with them on the weekend and does them up and races them and all that kind of stuff. And when I was at Goodwood a few years ago, I kind of got an appreciation for the supercar thing, particularly the classic supercars, because they are very James Bondy and gorgeous to look at.
For sure. Other examples this weekend, we're going to have the Lamborghini Huracan. It's the LP610, which is a V10 coupe. And I have friends and family messaging me going, Derek, what's all this chat about you? And I like cars. I'm passionate about electric vehicles and the electrification of vehicles. But you do have to appreciate where we've come from and some of the styles and some of the design languages that have been used in the past and that are now being brought back into an electric future. And what we're seeing with supercars is the developers, designers, manufacturers really like the electric side of things because it's instant torque, it's manageable power, it's much easier to control than an engine and easier to maintain than an engine. So a lot of the future supercars we're seeing moving forward will have electric or definitely electrified bits.
Yeah, I was going to ask you this because I remember a few months ago when you were on and we were talking through some of the more notions, like the bigger sized EVs, and some of them are gorgeous and some of them are horrific looking. But in terms of today's definition of a supercar and today's EVs, what brands and manufacturers fall into that category, if any?
Yeah, you're going to see a lot more the likes of the Ferrari bringing something fully electric to the market, the Lamborghinis, the Bugattis. Bugatti has been taken over by Rimac, and Rimac is a where country is it? I'm trying to think. Is it Romania or no, Croatia? And so Croatia. And so what they've said is this guy has developed his own supercar, the Navara, like €2 million. And they've said, OK, he's got the expertise in this now. So Volkswagen Group have said, OK, we want you to work your magic on Bugatti. And so these are names that you'll see in supercar magazines. You'll see sprinkled around Ireland and around Dublin, a bit more of this in the UK. They do like their more extravagant vehicles. We are penalised a lot in Ireland with vehicle registration tax, so you'll see a lot more English reg cars floating around. But my story being that people with this expertise and legacy OEMs and manufacturers who have been here for 50 or 100 years, the likes of the Mercedes-Benz, etc., they are looking at developing supercars with massively top performance, top speeds, but also that endurance. And it's a real test bed for future electric vehicles coming down the line as well. And so with emission standards coming in and zero emission and low emission zones, a lot of supercars and a lot of manufacturers are saying, okay, we better take this electric stuff seriously. And that's what I'll be chatting about at the weekend on one of the panels.
Yeah, it's really interesting because over the years since you've been on the show, like we always talk about, okay, so what's the range of this car and how practical is it in terms of boot space and all the rest? And although I am very past remarkable in terms of the sort of first glance, first impression at a car, we don't often talk about the design aspect being the central focus of it. Are we moving back towards notions and cars being a thing of beauty as well as a thing of status now powered by battery?
Yeah, for sure. And a lot of it originally what may have been aero and aerodynamics and having the ability to utilize design to get more, eke more, what am I trying to say, range out of an electric vehicle. But for an example, referencing that AMG supercar, that's going to be their fastest car ever. That's going to be their longest range car ever. That's got 1,300 horsepower. And so now, yes, it is only a concept, but what it has done is it's shown that these supercars can look amazing, can go. It recently, the Mercedes-Benz Concept AMG GTXX rolls off the tongue, Jess.
Yeah.
Recently did a 24-hour drive. And the original record was around about 1,400 miles. That was the ability to do it. And it's done 3,400 miles in a 24-hour period. So it's not just flash in the pan, drag race and that kind of stuff. Manufacturers are really looking at, okay, if we are going to be serious about electric, if we are going to be serious about beautiful cars that people aspire to, that young boys and girls around the world are going to have posters up. Do people still do posters in bedrooms?
I don't think so. I don't think so. You're only about 70 years too late there, but go on.
Screensavers on their iPads. With screensavers on their iPads, the images of these cars are evoking. I don't know what it is. People like to aspire towards a vehicle. And like you said, Jess, people who get on well in life and go up the social ladder and get promoted at work, the status symbol of a car is definitely there. It is going to be electric in the future. And there will be people out there that will be able to afford supercars, and they will also be electric. And so they have to have, notions is the wrong word, but definitely style and substance that people will, head turning, I suppose, is how I'd boil it down to. Is it going to be a head turner of a car?
Mm. And like, obviously the event is going on, as you said, in the Red Car Park in Dundrum. Do you have a vision in mind of who the person walking around is going to be? Is this something that is for someone who's looking to buy a car, or is it the car fanatic who did have the posters on the wall and they were growing up and they just want to come down and have a look and a feel and see what exactly is available in the market but also exists in the world?
Absolutely, yeah. It's more car people, families that want a nice day out, that might be doing a bit of shopping in the town centre anyway in Dundrum, and this is on, and that's no extra charge to go and have a little mooch around. You will have the anoraks there, you will have the car aficionados there that will know the differences between all the Ferraris, but then you will have the kids popping along going, I like the yellow car, I like the red car. But it is something totally unique. This is the fourth year they've done it, and it won't be just walking around the car park looking at cars. There will be panel discussions, there will be experts, there will be the Dutch Grand Prix is on Sunday, so the car heads and the Grand Prix heads out there at the Welsh, oh, I'm not going to leave the house because the Grand Prix is on. There's going to be a Grand Prix section in Dundrum specially set up. There's going to be raffles. The charity partner is Bumbulance, the Children's Ambulance. And so there's lots of stuff there for the family. There's even going to be the Hyundai Ioniq 5N, which is one of my favourite electric vehicles. And that is part of a cohort of EVs that allows you to power other devices from that battery. And so it's called vehicle to load. And they are going to have a DJ set from legendary Irish DJ and artist Mark McCabe, all powered by the Hyundai Ioniq 5N.
Mark McCabe has a busy weekend, isn't he? At EP as well, Janie Mac. Okay, so that's all going on in Dundrum this weekend. As you said, it's free to go, and the charity partner is Bumbulance, which is a fantastic organisation that does incredible work. So that is going on this weekend. That's where you are. If people want to see just how tall you are, they can go down and look at you as a spectacle too. There's so much to look at and do. But while I have you, I mentioned there at the top about a question that we had in last week from somebody who bought a house in Cork, and they were looking for advice in terms of tech in their home. Now, you and I have been threatening to do something on tech because we've both bought homes in the last little while. But you have, as always, shown me up because you've started a new Instagram page and you've also done a million and one different projects. Would you like us to talk us through what you did in your summer holidays?
While I was off and at the weekend and away from electric vehicles, like you, Jess, buying houses was on the list, and thankfully we were able to secure one in North County Dublin. And I said, right, a brand new house, how do I make it as smart as it can be? Because the reason I got into electric vehicles was the tech side of things, really, and how that interested and intrigued me. So I have started a little Instagram account called Smart Home Tested, a YouTube channel as well. And so, yes, it's starting from the front door and having that doorbell that notifies you. There's lots of different smart doorbells out there, but I've gone for one that is locally recorded. There isn't a monthly subscription. It's on dual Wi-Fi bands. And what I would like to do is automate everything in the house. Mm. And everything to just happen without you realizing it's happened. So vision in my head is if it's at nighttime, as I walk towards the doorbell will trigger the bulb over it to say, there's somebody walking towards us. Let's turn on the light outside. Let's also turn on the light inside and have that whole little scenario of what's happening and automating what could happen within in the house. I'm looking at a facial recognition lock for the front door. I have it. I just have to put it up.
What brand is that? Now, come here. Whoa. So my version of this was we're either Google or Amazon and we've built a little thing around it. Facial recognition locked for the door.
There we go. So it's SwitchBot is the name of the company. You know them well. And they do have a facial recognition little receiver that you can stick on the outside of the door. It also uses fingerprint or keypad code entries. And what I like about it is facial recognition, number one, so you don't even have to take your hands away from your shopping. It'll see your face, and people have tried it, and I will be trying it with photographs, with sunglasses, with baseball caps on, and it still only works with your actual face. And so what that will do is that will unlock the front door, and then I'll be able to just open it up and push my way in. I'm basing my smart home around a system platform called Home Assistant. And Home Assistant is locally, everything is local. So there's no connection, no subscription. And if the cloud goes down, you can still open your front door. You can still have the lights turn on. You can still watch your security cameras. And so, yeah, it's been a very interesting journey. I'm just starting, like you, Jess, and we've been back and over, whether it's on Instagram or whether it's on YouTube, with regards to having this house as automated. Now, it's a house that I bought. I didn't design and wire it myself. So there's challenges in itself to that, because I would like wired security cameras rather than Wi-Fi security cameras, just because I'm hearing about Wi-Fi blockers and stuff like that. And so, yeah, there's definitely, we're going to be talking, Jess, there's going to be future conversations about it, but basing everything on Home Assistant, and I'm going to have everything from leak detection, so that if there is a leak somewhere in the house, my little detectors will be able to turn off the water supply so I shouldn't come home to a swimming pool. All the way up to everything being automated, that when the sun goes down, the blinds go down in the bedrooms or in the living room. And so there's a little sensor there, or even a weather station outside that when it goes raining, you know, to bring in the washing. So yeah, it can get as nerdy as you want it to get, Jess.
It's like Dexter's lab. That's what I think your house is. I can just picture you running around in a white coat. I do want to, like, when next time you're in studio, we might talk through this in depth, because there's a few things that are non-technology that we've done in our house, and I think it's still worth talking about. You've done the same thing, I think, from your Instagram, which is having rainwater catching systems and just trying to be as efficient as possible in terms of energy, water, all of the elements. But you do need to do your research. Now, I personally have done diddly squat in my house. Harry has done all of it. But I do think next time you're in, we might talk through that. We might talk through how you're getting on with your doorbell. And then maybe if you have any questions, if you are someone who's in a similar boat, or maybe you just want to retrofit stuff in your house, email me techtalk@newstalk.com. And Derek, I'm sure you'd be happy to answer as many questions as you can.
Absolutely.
Awesome stuff. Well, look, if you are in Dublin and around Dundrum Town Centre, pop down and have a gawk. You'll see Derek, and you can have a chat with him, look at the supercars, and have a great old weekend. And again, questions for smart homes and bits, techtalk@newstalk.com. But for the moment, Derek Riley of Nevo.ie. Thanks a million.
Thanks, Jess.
Tech Talk with Jess Kelly.
Welcome back to Tech Talk. This is Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. As always, if you have any questions or comments, you can email me right now, techtalk@newstalk.com, or you'll find me on Instagram @JessKellyNT. Now, I want to tell you a story about one of the most interesting characters from the world of tech in recent years. We've spoken about her quite a lot on this programme, particularly in the context of John Carreyrou's brilliant book, Bad Blood. But now Elizabeth Holmes has been posting her own story on X. The 41-year-old has reactivated her account, claiming she has done nothing wrong and that she was silenced. The mother of two says she's spending her incarceration reading, learning and thinking. But what led to her being incarcerated? Let's have a look back at the career and crimes of Elizabeth Holmes. Every now and then, something new comes along in the world of tech that causes quite a stir.
What we want to do is make a leapfrog product that is way smarter than any mobile device has ever been and super easy to use. This is what iPhone is.
5G will allow for up to 1 million connections per access point.
The Internet of Things. And by that, I mean the smart tech in your homes.
While all of these developments have improved our lives in different ways, it was the vision of a 19-year-old college dropout that looked set to transform medicine as we knew it.
I believe the individual is the answer to the challenges of healthcare.
Elizabeth Holmes dropped out of Stanford University in 2003 to pursue her dream, one which she'd been pretty vocal about since a very young age. She wanted to be a billionaire, and she planned to do it by developing a transformational medtech device.
How do you take tests that are sold for $5,000 and make them available for $2.99? The product is a tool for realizing the outcome, which is more accessible information. And so we began our work knowing that we wanted to develop a whole laboratory and a whole set of laboratory tests that could be accessible for incredibly low cost.
The vision was clear: create a device slightly bigger than a 2 euro coin that could take a small blood sample from a simple skin prick and diagnose multiple conditions, from everyday ailments to different kinds of cancer. She had a story that she often told at public events about how this idea came to her.
In the United States today, healthcare is the leading cause of bankruptcy, and the lack of it, the leading cause of the suffering associated with finding out too late in the disease progression process that someone you love is really, really sick. I grew up spending summers and the holidays with my uncle. I remember his love of crossword puzzles and trying to teach us to play football. I remember how much he loved the beach. I remember how much I loved him. He was diagnosed one day with skin cancer, which all of a sudden was brain cancer.
Her uncle's illness pushed her to find a way to make preventative healthcare more accessible. Now, before we go any further, we need to talk about Elizabeth Holmes. She idolized Apple's Steve Jobs, so much so that she started to wear black polo necks, hired former marketing teams who had worked with Apple in the past, and held meetings with certain departments on certain days, as she'd heard that's how Steve did it. Elizabeth speaks in a monotone voice, and she has big blue eyes that are almost hypnotic. She comes across as a humble genius in interviews and had many powerful fans right around the world.
Every place we work with my foundation, not the CGI, my goal is to work ourselves out of a job. I believe people want to stand on their own 2 feet. I think they want to be empowered. And that's one of the reasons I've been so impressed by your dogged determination, not only to cut the cost and increase the quality of lab tests, but to give people who give the blood the results of their tests.
Yeah.
That was former US President Bill Clinton speaking with Elizabeth Holmes at a 2015 Clinton Global Initiative event. As time went by, Elizabeth and her team worked out of the Silicon Valley HQ to create the Edison. This was a machine that was said to be capable of running a number of blood tests from a single drop. Here's the technical rundown of how it was meant to work. A tiny drop of blood would be collected. The tiny capsule containing the blood was inserted to the Edison, and it would perform immunoassays, which looked for the presence of an antibody or antigen within the fluid. A standard immunoassay test can look for things like hormone levels or some cancer markers, but the Theranos device offered more than 240 tests. Holmes started to gain serious media interest in 2013 and had some very heavy hitters sitting on the board of the company, including former US Secretary of Defense James Mattis and former Secretary of State Henry Kissinger. She was the world's youngest female self-made billionaire in 2015, and at its peak, the company's valuation was over $9 billion.
I mean, think about this differently. I actually don't think that our valuation is what matters here. What matters here is the integrity of our data and being able to demonstrate that and beginning, you know, continuing to execute on this model that we've created and show that we can realize a shift in this space. And if we do that, our valuation will be realized or potentially continue to go up. And if we don't, it'll go down, and that's fine, right? But we're not doing this because of our valuation. mean, I want to be building this company for the rest of my life.
Needless to say, it didn't work out.
The company went live with its finger stick tests in Walgreens stores in Northern California and Arizona, and knew the two people at the top, Elizabeth Holmes and her boyfriend, Sonny Balwani, knew very well that the tests were unreliable. For one thing, the Theranos machine only handled several of the tests, a handful of the tests, and most of the tests were being done on third-party commercial analyzers that they'd modified and hacked to adapt them to small samples. And one of the things they did was they diluted the small droplets of blood to make the volume bigger to accommodate these commercial machines. And that, of course, introduced all sorts of room for error.
That is John Kerryrew, a journalist with The Wall Street Journal. After his reporting, regulators came down on Theranos and tests were retracted. Machines were recalled and the company collapsed.
All right, federal officials have reportedly launched a criminal investigation into blood testing company Theranos. The Wall Street Journal reports on the front page that the Justice Department and the Securities and Exchange Commission are looking into whether the biotech startup misled investors, partners, or government officials about its testing technology. Theranos.
By 2018, Holmes stepped down as CEO before the company was fully dissolved in September that year. The U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission charged Holmes with elaborate years-long fraud.
How many tests could it run at that time in 2010?
I don't know exactly what the number was. There was probably tens of tests.
That case was settled with Holmes paying a $500,000 penalty, but the agreement did not require her to admit any guilt. Both Holmes and her former business and romantic partner Ramesh Sonny Balwani then faced criminal charges. What were those charges? Well, they focused on defrauding both investors and patients and making false claims about the effectiveness of the company's blood testing technology between 2010 and 2015. Holmes's trial began in September 2021 and ran for around 15 weeks. She faced 11 federal fraud charges. Here's a report from NBC News.
The Theranos trial is heating up. After 3 months, the prosecution rested its case today. And this afternoon, the defense made a huge splash, calling Elizabeth Holmes to the stand.
She explained how Theranos started from humble beginnings. And if you're wondering, her voice has not changed. It is a deep baritone still.
NBC Bay Area Scott Budman was inside the courtroom as Holmes took the stand. So, Scott, legal analysts say this is a risky move.
It was a risky move, Jessica and Audrey, and it was a surprise move. This is what everyone's been waiting for 11 weeks now, but what nobody expected at the very end on a Friday. But instead, with about an hour left of court for the whole week, they suddenly called Elizabeth Holmes to the stand. She walked up, took off her mask. The first time, by the way, that anyone in the courtroom saw her without a mask in 11 weeks. She introduced herself and talked about the early origin story of Theranos. She talked about how the original name was Real Time Cures. She talked about how she got some of the original money from her parents. Now remember, Holmes dropped out of Stanford at 19, so she testified that some of the money that her parents had saved for college actually went towards the company. She then started hiring people and, most importantly, meeting investors. Those investors who would fund the company from the very beginning all the way up until the bitter end. She was very poised and, like you said, her voice did not change. It was the same tone that we've gotten used to all these years. One note, this was her team talking to her, the defense team, and they took the whole hour, certainly no cross-examination today. They want the jury to have a poised Holmes, a Holmes who smiled at the jury and made eye contact with the jury and told a positive story as they go for the weekend. We won't hear any cross-examine until sometime into next week.
Scott, quick question here. So the jury saw her today, but the voice is the same, but the look is so different. We're accustomed to seeing Holmes of Theranos in the black turtleneck and the stark clothing, and now she's had a much more warm, inviting look. How do you think it all played with the jury?
It seemed to play well with the jury. A lot of people in court, and obviously we weren't allowed to talk to jurors, But a lot of people in court noticed for the last 3 months exactly what you just said, Jessica, that she's adopted a different look and that she comes across very friendly. She still makes eye contact with the jurors, even with the mask on. So it's not that much of a surprise when she took the stand that she felt somehow personable to them. And I think that's the goal, to try to humanize her and make her personable to the jury, as opposed to the very severe CEO that people saw in years past.
Now, despite delivering that testimony, things didn't go her way. The jury found Elizabeth Holmes guilty on 4 counts, not guilty on 4, and was deadlocked on 3. That led to a mistrial of those 3 counts. Sentencing took place on November 18th, 2022, when she received a 135-month prison sentence. That's just over 11 years. She reported to prison in May 2023 and is serving her sentence at a minimum security facility in Texas. She's due for release in 2032. Speaking in an exclusive interview with People magazine, Holmes says she has continued to work on tech and innovation, as well as working within the prison. There is no denying that Holmes will go down in infamy in the tech history books, and all eyes will be on what she does once she's released. If you want to know more about Elizabeth Holmes, her career, her early life, and what exactly happened, I would highly recommend you pick up Bad Blood, Secrets and Lies in a Silicon Valley Startup, written by the man who has been so instrumental in the downfall of Elizabeth Holmes. That is John Carreyrou. We'll be right back.
Tech Talk with Jess Kelly.
Welcome back to the final part of this week's Tech Talk. This is Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. We're going to jump into the inbox in a quick minute and answer your tech questions. If you have any for me, you can drop me an email to techtalk@newstalk.com. But obviously enough, given the time of year, the number of people who've been on to me on Instagram over the last number of weeks looking for advice when it comes to buying a laptop for school or college has been significant. So I'm going to give you some tips, right? If you haven't bought your device yet, maybe you only got your CAO offer the other day, here's what you need to take into account. And the first one is probably the most important. Depending on the course you or your child is doing, you need to find out if there are specific requirements. So for example, if somebody is doing engineering or architecture, perhaps there's a specific piece of software that they need to use for that course. So you may need a specific spec on the laptop. So there is no point going out and buying a device until you know for sure what you need the device to do. Next up, obviously enough, is budget. And the good news here is that there is something for every budget. Regardless of the spec, you'll be able to get something, whether it's brand new in a store or whether it's a refurbished device, you'll be able to find something to suit your needs. So go in with a price in mind. Go in with the spec requirements in mind and then look at the devices. You'll see that there is an awful lot of information on a spec sheet when you go into a store like Currys or Harvey Norman, and there'll be things like storage, processor, RAM, all of this stuff. And for the most part, and we said this in the context of phones recently enough with John Riley, but it's very difficult to buy a bad laptop, right? So it'll definitely do something for you, but you just need to make sure it'll do the thing that you need it to do. The most important bit of a spec sheet that I look at always, whether I'm buying it for myself or if I'm reviewing a device, is the RAM. So that is what enables the device to multitask. So say, for example, I have a Microsoft Surface laptop. That's my work laptop. I use Adobe Audition to edit audio. I use, obviously enough, Outlook for my email. I have a few different programs running at the one time, and it is super powerful because it has 16 gigs of RAM. That's a very powerful machine. I would say don't buy anything with less than 8 gigs of RAM, personally speaking. Now that does, there's a deviation there if you are looking at a Chromebook. So when I was in college, I did an arts degree. A lot of that was writing Word docs and submitting things on a platform called Moodle. So I didn't need a super powerful laptop for when I was in college. I had a Dell XPS that was far too powerful for what I needed, and it cost me a fair bit. I could have just bought a Google Chromebook and it would have done the job. So once you have an idea of what it is you need to do, how much your budget is, and if you need something with at least 8 gigs of RAM or something like a Chromebook, then you get into the rest. So the other bits on the spec sheet that I mentioned there, the processor doesn't matter that much unless you are doing something demanding in terms of graphics and all the rest. But for me, it's not a big deal. Then the storage. So you'll see that there might be 128 gig or 256 gig or maybe a terabyte. You've got different options in terms of the storage. And it's not as important as it once was because of the cloud. I would recommend finding out from the college if they include storage, cloud storage, within the education package. So for example, a lot of universities will give the education version of Microsoft 365, and included in that will be OneDrive storage. If your university or if your college course doesn't offer that, I would prioritize getting cloud storage, paying for cloud storage over getting a super duper 1 terabyte hard drive on your laptop. Because realistically, everything can be stored in the cloud. It's a safer way to do things because we do know laptops, as I've learned this week, can go missing or they can break. You're better off just having them in the cloud. So I wouldn't be too swayed in terms of the storage of a device. Then comes things like the screen size. So I really like a 14-inch laptop. I think it's the perfect size to throw in your backpack. You can hook up a laptop like this, the one that I have in front of me, my Microsoft Surface, to an external monitor. But it's also very comfortable to work on over a longer period of time. But just keep in mind that the bigger laptops will be heavier in your bag. So just keep all of these little factors in mind. As I say, the big deciding factors will be if you have particular software requirements, and then your budget. Don't get upsold when you're in a store. Don't be bamboozled by offers, red tags, flashy deals, anything like that. Go in with a plan in mind. Ask the right questions to ensure that the device will do what you need it to do, and then go from there. If you've any specific requirements or questions about your own requirements, you can email me techtalk@newstalk.com and we'll go through as many of them as we can on next week's show. But your first port of call has to be the course and find out if there are requirements. It's also worth looking at refurbished laptops. There are so many out there. Refurb.ie, which we've had on the show a little while ago, is a great place to turn. Dell have their own refurbished outlet. Apple has their own refurbished outlet. So there are options. Don't get into a panic. Don't be bamboozled and don't spend more than you need to. Now, Monica Lewinsky has been a feature of public consciousness for many, many years after finding herself in the eye of a political storm alongside former US President Bill Clinton. In recent years, she has done incredible work highlighting the impact of public shaming and online harassment as well as bullying. As part of that work, she did an interview on Last Week Tonight with John Oliver a few years ago, who sat across from her and listened to the pain she went through as comedians and commentators made jokes at her expense. Recently, in an interview for her own podcast called Reclaiming, John Oliver sat on the other side of the interview desk and reflected on their meeting. Take a listen.
I will say I'm also very, very grateful that you did it, because I know that it was not an easy decision to make. It's like, as part of that process that you were clearly going through, like a TED Talk and a Vanity Fair op-ed is precise, right? And it's all on your terms. You can get word to word, moment to moment. You can control all of it. Mm-hmm. And so I was extra grateful that you're willing to put yourself in the position where you would be under less control. And I do think it was a massive act of trust on your part. And I am very grateful that you thought we were worthy of that trust, because I know your trust had been broken in the past.
But you helped restore that.
All right. I'm really glad.
Thank you. It was great. And I appreciated that you acknowledged that there had been some times you had told jokes too, which I think for me, it was really meaningful, because I hadn't heard the jokes, thankfully, but whatever jokes I have heard, that when someone takes responsibility and apologizes, you actually end up it's not just back to neutral where you were, it's more positive, because there's a value. That, I don't know if that makes sense.
Oh, it makes total sense. And I think I felt there was going to be more utility, especially in terms of an audience that we were talking to, to be coming from a position where I was not unimpeachably clean.
Right.
Right. And so it felt like there was a more interesting conversation to have because so few people are, right? So you're not trying to talk from the high ground, especially in comedy, right? Where even in the larger part of that piece, before even your interview came in, you know, comedy can be a blunt instrument. And so the no bullying campaign that you were doing at that time was so kind. Comedy is often not kind. I think I might be inherently less kind than you are in some areas. So it almost felt like the shades of gray there. I guess I sometimes might end up being meaner in comedy than I would be as a human being.
That was John Oliver in conversation with Monica Lewinsky on her podcast, Reclaiming. I'd highly recommend taking a listen to the full thing, which is on Spotify, or you can watch it on YouTube as well. But it also brought to mind the brilliant John Ronson's So You've Been Publicly Shamed. There are some incredible stories in that book told in a really interesting and engaging way. But it's the sort of book that sticks with you afterwards and, you know, you're mulling it over and thinking about the consequences thereafter. There's stories in it that I remember sharing on Facebook and laughing at the people in the videos, you know, and it just kind of get you to press pause and think about your actions. So I'd highly recommend both Monica Lewinsky's podcast and So You've Been Publicly Shamed by John Ronson. We're going to get to the inbox in just a quick minute to answer your tech questions. You can get them into me now, techtalk@newstalk.com. But before we get to it, I want to talk to you briefly about a story that surfaced during the week. And just to flag, there will be mention of suicide. So if this is not something you're in the headspace for, I will not be offended if you turn over. A lawsuit was filed in the Superior Court of California on Tuesday by Matt and Maria Rain. This couple are suing OpenAI, which is the parent company of ChatGPT, alleging that the chatbot encouraged their son to take his own life. This is the first legal action accusing OpenAI of wrongful death. Logs of chats between their son Adam and ChatGPT showed how he explained his suicidal thoughts and argued that the bot validated, quote, his most harmful and self-destructive thoughts. In a statement issued by OpenAI, the company said, "We extend our deepest sympathies to the Rain family during this difficult time." Now, this is obviously an incredibly tragic case, and more details will come to light over time. But it's highlighted for many the fact that individuals of all ages are engaging with large language models such as ChatGPT in new ways. They're turning to these platforms for advice, for connection, for friendship, and according to research published here in Ireland, even romantic relationships. That research was compiled on behalf of Pure Telecom and showed that 10% of adults in this country have had a romantic relationship with an AI chatbot in the last 12 months. Now, you may balk at that, think it's utterly wild or out of the realms of possibility, but we know from other parts of the world too that this is happening. And some of the conversations that I've been seeing online this week have related to the concerns around the fact that not all people who use large language models understand large language models. Sometimes we forget that they have been designed in a certain way to keep us coming back. They say what we want to hear, they endorse our views, and they don't push back in the way that maybe your friends or your family or your parents do. Obviously, there is a serious side to all of this from a social, psychological, and emotional point of view. But it's yet another case of us not knowing the full impact of technology that we're using until a few years down the line. What I would say is, chat to the people in your life who are using this technology. Ask them, are they using this technology? Maybe they're doing it and they're not telling anyone about it. Engage with them without judgment. Find how you can support them and then perhaps highlight some of the pitfalls of these platforms. We're going to watch the case of the Rains over the coming weeks and we will bring you updates. But in the meantime, if you've been affected by anything we've spoken about here, you can reach out to the Samaritans at any stage. It is 116 123. Now, let's take a look at some of your tech questions. First up this week is Kieran, and he says, any recommendations for a notes app to dictate to? Yes, there are some great ones out there. What I use, and I use it all the time for this very show, is the Google Notes app. It's called Keep Notes. It was installed on my phone and it is great. I make to-do lists, I make checklists and all the rest, but there's also an audio function so I can speak into it and it can transcribe in real time. It's not perfect. There's a few things that I need to go back in and tweak, but for the most part, it does the job just fine. Also worth noting that the recorder apps, so if you have a smartphone, if you go to the recorder app, open it out. Very often now, like I know again on my Pixel phone, it can transcribe. So it'll record audio. Say I'm in a meeting or in an interview. I can record it and then a transcription will be available and you can tweak it. So what I'd recommend is try out some of the free ones before you go down the paid route. There is a company called Dragon that makes software that you can pay for and use and it's a little bit better. But I have to say the Keep Notes app on my phone does the job just fine. Next, we have a question here from Cam who says, looking to upgrade from iPhone 13, should I go for the 16 or wait for the 17? What I would say is wait because the new iPhone is going to be launched in 2 weeks' time. They sent out the invites for the event, which will take place at Apple HQ in California, and it's happening in 2 weeks. So take your time. Wait and see what they announce. If it is something that absolutely blows you away and you think is worth the hefty price tag that will no doubt come with the new iPhone, then you can go for that. But if you're not overly pushed, go for the 16. You've got good options there. So yeah, hold out for a few weeks. We have another upgrade question from Caroline who says, have a Samsung S20 upgrading at the moment. Do I stick with Samsung or try the Pixel 8? I would try the Pixel 8. I was the biggest fan of Samsung in the world. And then I moved to iPhone and then I moved to Google. The Google Pixel phones, and I would not go back. They are just, for me, superior. The camera is the best on the market. Even though the Pixel 8 is now two iterations older, because as we heard on the show last week, the Pixel 10 has just been announced. But yeah, I would say go Pixel all day, every day. Final one for this week is Rachel. And Rachel says, I have a Samsung FE watch. Should I go for the S25 or the iPhone 16? I would say go for the S25 because the Samsung Watch FE doesn't work with iPhone. And that is a point of contention for fans of, you know, maybe the Apple Watch and Samsung phones and vice versa. But the compatibility just isn't there. So if you want to keep using your Samsung Watch, go for the S25. It is a very good phone. It has a good camera, good battery. And yeah. It'll all talk to each other. It's all that one big ecosystem. So there you go. I hope that helps.